I would like to thank today's sponsor, Cloversoft. If you're someone who wants safe and affordable products that are good for the earth, Cloversoft has your answer. A leading provider in Singapore and the region, Cloversoft has achieved a strong market presence and is reputed for its high quality, eco-friendly and safe household products. Cloversoft works hard to empower individuals to be the hero we have always wanted to be to Mother Earth. This is done through making affordable, safe and eco-friendly daily consumables accessible globally. Their goal is to facilitate convenience for this change into every household and business, from 99.99% antibacterial hand wash to unbleached bamboo organic antibacterial wipes. They are soft and very handy in times of need during travel, trekking and emergency situations. It doesn't have any artificial fragrance which doesn't linger in your hands. It's not only a good product for babies, but also adults too. You can go to cloversoft.com.sg to find out more. As a business leader, your mindset matters now more than ever. You can find lots of gurus ready to teach you about a positive mindset, and studies show that a positive mindset can improve your quality of life. But having a positive mindset is not enough to create success for you or your company. The real difference is knowing when you're making judgments and decisions from a fixed mindset versus a Spartan mindset. So for those of you who want to get out of your head, get into your gut and grow your business, then this episode is for you. Hi, my name is Rayson Chu and I'm your host for The Regency Show. And today, tonight, it's really our honor and pleasure to have this extraordinary coach. His name is none other than Reid Maltby. Leveraging 2 master's degrees, sports psychology and early childhood development, and 30 years of professional coaching experience, Coach Reid has dedicated his life to creating the very best environments for achieving peak performance. He has provided training programs to various sporting organizations, including the Gaelic Games Association, US Sailing, Soccer Canada, the USOC, and the PGA of Canada. A former Division I athlete, he shared his experiences in his 2015 TEDx talk, Echoes Beyond the Game, and he knows firsthand the power of language to create optimal performance. His book, The Spartan Mindset, due out on 18 April 2023, focuses significantly on the impact of language on performance. It is a must-read for anyone who strives to be a more effective and supportive communicator in the sporting world and beyond. You guys can actually go to Kindle and all the other Amazon and all the other bookstores to actually check it out. You can pre-book it first, all right? And the book will arrive to you in a short while, all right? And not just that, this amazing guy, right? He has been featured on TEDx, ESPN Radio, Huffington Post, and many more. So without further ado, let's welcome this amazing gentleman into the house. Woohoo, yeah.
Thank you for having me on the show. I am so excited to talk to you, and I'm so excited to share the mindset message. I think your audience was absolutely going to love our conversation.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like recently, so much has happened, COVID-19, recession and all this other stuff. And I truly believe that all these people will need this mindset hacks for themselves, because, man, this is not a pretty good time for many people, especially from Twitter, all these big IT companies, right? They are all being sacked because of, you know, whatever reason that is. But I'm really grateful that, you know, you're here to actually help us to boost our mindset and get us going, because I'm pretty sure a lot of people who are tuning in right now, they need this thing to have a Kickstarter for 2023, especially if, let's say, they are being sacked, they are being fired from your job last month or a few months ago, things like that, and still can't find a job yet, or still not ready to kickstart their career again and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. It's the writing the book and then going through the process of editing and getting the full manuscript ready was helpful for me to shake off some of the poor internal voice dialogue, internal language that I had, and some of the traumas that I went through personally and that we went through as a world in the last couple of years. So it's definitely good timing for the book.
Yeah, I agree. And how have you been, man? It's been a while. We've corresponded via email, and you know, finally we've met, not still online. And how's everything on your end?
It's going well. It's getting busy with the book coming out in almost a month now. It's getting a little bit busier, but really enjoying going on shows and talking to people and sharing the stories with people. And I can't complain. How are things with you?
Been really busy, really, really busy, especially a lot of inbound emails coming in for podcasting as well. Other than from book thinkers as well, there are people like David Meltzer that's most likely coming in soon. People who are really big time entrepreneurs in their own space, like there's one of the co-founder of T. Chanley will be coming on to the podcast as well real soon. Most likely will be next month, April. We'll be having a lot of all these big guests that will be coming in soon to talk a lot about entrepreneurship and a lot of amazing stuff that we're going to talk about as well. So I'm really, really grateful for all these opportunities, and I'm really grateful for you to be here as well. And Reed, can you share with the audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Happy to. So I started out as a soccer player. I was a multi-sport athlete growing up. When I was 16, my mentor coach said, I really want you to get into coaching. I have a gift for you, is how he put it. He said that if I started coaching, I would see the game of soccer differently and it would transform my life. And he wasn't kidding. You know, 30 plus years later, I'm now 49 years old. I've been coaching all these years since I was 16. And it's really changed my perspective, not just in the coaching world and in soccer and sports, but just in life in general, having that influence of other people and being able to build these strong relationships and how we communicate and create performance environments. So I got a master's degree in sports psychology. Pretty convinced I was going to be a coach for a living when I came out of college after playing soccer in college. I said, it's terminal. I'm not going to play any further in my career. I think it's time I flip to the sideline full time. For a long time, I didn't think I could actually make a living being a coach. It's a very, you know, we talk about entrepreneurs and bootstrapping and grassroots initiatives. Coaching is one of those realms where you really do have to juggle quite a few balls in the air to make a living. And so for a long time, it was a hobby. And then in right about 2011, 2012, my wife talked me into going back and getting a second degree in early childhood education, which really shaped my thought process about how we communicate social emotional learning, behavioral patterns in children, even just setting up performance environments based on how they learn and not how we teach. And then, of course, brain body connection. A lot of the brain awareness stuff came from my second master's. And in 2015, as you mentioned, I did a TEDx, again, at my wife's encouragement. She said, you need to share your story with the world. And that put me in a different position where I've spent the last almost decade now as a consultant. I work with, as you mentioned, I work with governing bodies. I work with major sports organizations, professional teams, high school teams, youth clubs. I've worked all over the world. And I typically, if I'm working remote, I'm doing something with Sport New Zealand tonight, later tonight. If I work with groups that are remote, I typically do it in a webinar format. So I've run online summits and been involved in online summits to do it. And I love it because I feel like it scales. It's, as an entrepreneur, you're always looking for how you can scale. If you're a personal trainer, you only have so many hours in the day to train. But if you train in groups, now you can maximize and scale. If you train online, you can scale even further. Same thing as in my role. I went from coaching a team of 10 or 15 kids to realizing I could still do that, but then I could get in front of a room of 100 or 150 coaches. And my hope is that something that we work on together in our workshops, they take away and they transform lives. So now my scale is these 150 coaches all working with 100, 200, 300, 400, 500 kids in their career. How many more kids can I impact, or how many more athletes and people can I impact to create a better world beyond the game by scaling out and working with these coaches and organizations? And that's really where my passion is.
Nice. Wow, I can see from your or even hear the way you talk. I can feel your enthusiasm and your passion for all these kids as well. And wow, amazing. And just curious, out of curiosity, did you manage to coach any players, soccer players especially, that's from MLS or any EPL or all these teams in the world of soccer?
So what's interesting is for a period of time in my career, I really tracked that. I wanted to know how my players are doing. I wanted to be able to hang my hat on, hey, I created these players. In the last few years, I sort of lost touch with, because what I got was I found out kids were becoming doctors and they were becoming lawyers and they were becoming teachers and they were becoming coaches themselves and they were becoming, you know, tech entrepreneurs. And so a lot of my former athletes went on, and I realized that exactly what I wanted, they went on and became something excellent beyond the game itself. And so, but I have heard through the grapevine. I had a player who played internationally in Dubai, and I've had a few players on the futsal US national team. And then I would assume, knowing a few of my players, I had one team where I think every single one of them actually played college soccer, which is really cool. And I think I probably have a few that I know of one that is in the MLS academies and is named on the larger roster for an MLS team. And the only reason I know is he reached out to me and I saw the press on him. Otherwise, really what gets me excited is when a player reaches out and says, hey, I'm coaching my daughter's team and I want to coach just like I was coached by you, which means like I was coached by my mentors. So it's passing that legacy on. Those are the really cool stories to hear about these players who are going on. I really truly believe that we blow it. We make a mistake when we have 15 kids in front of us. We're an influencer in their lives. They respect us and they want to listen to us. And then we focus on just one or two because those are the ones that we think are actually going to make it. That's great. I still want to give them those resources to make it. But those other 13 or 14, my hope is that they, if they leave the sport, that I've done something for them so that they have excellence on their own, whatever it is they choose to do. So those are my victory stories of when I hear from kids that are off changing the world.
Wow, nice. Wow, love it. I mean, like, even though they are no longer playing the sport as full-time, they might be, you know, a teacher, a coach or things like that, or doctor. At least they are doing something amazing in their field as well. And for those of them that actually went on to be, like what you mentioned, like they are playing internationally in Dubai and US, that is something that you're supposedly, I would say, you feel proud of, because you see the impact that you have influenced them, that you have helped them to apply whatever they wanted in their own life, in their own sports and all this other stuff. This has helped them to actually make them feel better, and it has transformed their mindset in a sense. And this is something that we're going to talk a lot about later on, about transforming mindset as well, and the Spartan mindset, okay, because this is what our topic is all about. And before we actually dive into the focus of our interview, our listeners would love to get to know you a bit better. So can you tell us a bit about your backstory on how you became a coach?
Yes. So at 16, I was playing high school soccer. I was at a school where you typically didn't play varsity unless you were a junior or even a senior. And I got lucky my sophomore year, I actually played varsity, and that introduced me to my mentor coach. The following year, I came in and I was already, you know, experienced, felt like I knew the ropes. I was no longer that fresh eyed, naive, scared kid. And because of that, I think he saw that opportunity to sit me down and talk me into coaching. The first team I ever coached was an under 8-year-old boys team. So 7-year-olds, I was 16. I wasn't much older than them. And they were the Grossbeck Killer Bees. I still remember the name of the team. And he had me coach them during my high school season. So I'd do practice and then at high school, and then I'd run over to their fields. And then from there, I spent a lot of time doing his soccer camps with my mentor coach, spending the time traveling around the country every summer working for various soccer camps. So I got to see the world. I got to see parts of the U.S. that I would have never seen otherwise. And then I coached while I was still playing college soccer. I actually coached Davidson College's club team. And like I said, at that point, it was all still a hobby. I made great money in the summer, which allowed me to then not have to worry about working during the school year. but I never really saw it as a full-time. And then from there, once I really got steeped into the coaching world, I served in roles as a director of coaching. So I managed the coaching education and the team of coaches at clubs. I became an executive director of a club. And then I went on and actually worked with Soccer Shots here in the U.S. There's an organization called Soccer Shots, which works with kids from 2 to 9. They're a child's first soccer experience, but they call themselves child development experts first, because soccer is just the vehicle, and they deliver values and mentorship, and they deliver social skill building for children, and of course fundamental movement patterns, and then they layer soccer in there, and from there it continued to grow outward. But really, it was just that one conversation with my mentor who wanted to transform the world through me, and off we went.
Wow, awesome. I mean, with that, you have already built such a huge empire for yourself in terms of coaching. And I'm pretty sure, it took you a long time to actually reach where you are right now, right? I think about, 10 years, 20 years, in order to be, at this level of coaching success, in a sense?
Yeah, and I'm still growing. I hope that every time I do a workshop, and the beauty is that I'm working with other sports now, so I'm working with volleyball and swimming and lacrosse and sailing. I'm actually executive director of the Intercollegiate Sailing Association as well, and I do a lot of work with U.S. Sailing. And I never sailed. I lived in Ohio. All we had were lakes. I was in a river. I was landlocked, for all intents and purposes. But not knowing anything about these sports, and then bringing over these transcendent concepts that it doesn't matter what sport it is, you're still working with human beings in a performance environment. But then asking these questions, being a total idiot, a naive person, not knowing a sport, asking these questions, I learned so much from the people that I work with. I just did a workshop for U.S. Sailing a few months ago, and the feedback came back from the participants on the workshop. And it's so funny, because I'm looking at their feedback and I'm like, I learned as much from them as they did from doing the workshop with me. So hopefully I'm not done growing, but yeah, it takes a long time, a long time. In the sporting world, a lot of times coaches aren't seen as professionals in some of the younger ages, and we really are. It should be just like if you're a physicist or a firefighter or a teacher or whatever, you need training, you need apprenticeship, you need time on task working with athletes and building up that skill. And so you can't just, if you don't know what you don't know, you can be really dangerous when you're working with children. So there needs to be a level of professionalism that comes to sport. So, yeah, it takes a long time.
Yeah, I agree. And I also watched your TEDx talk the other day where you actually sent to me, and I was curious about it. I was like watching it. And the first 30 seconds, you're like schooling your boy, and then after that you're like telling him things, and then after that you're actually explain to us about, hey, the power of words, how you can actually talk to the kids, and how you can actually not talk to them in that manner, but you have to talk to them in this way, and how it can impact them, and all this other stuff. And they're like, oh wow, this is amazing, and this is what parents need to learn from, and that is how to actually talk to their kids, and not just, schooling them and scolding and telling them, hey, you nasty boy, and all this vulgarities, profanities out. Yeah, and of course, I really admire your story and your journey as well as an entrepreneur and a coach as well. So I'm pretty sure you had a lot of mistakes along the way, you have a lot of learning journeys along the way, and I would like to ask you, do you have a favorite failure of yours, and how has that failure or parent failure set you up for later success?
That's a good one to ask, because I have a lot of failures. I think it's the only way, we fail forward. It's the only way we grow. And I've made my fair share of mistakes on my kids. I failed a lot in some roles like you were talking about, and just figuring out how to teach and interact with my kids differently, because each kid is different. But probably my biggest failure that helped shape my coaching at the next level was a coaching failure with a kid. I was working with a team of 11-year-olds, and in the moment, during a game, I usually, when we set goals as a team, they were usually process goals. I'm not a big fan of the outcome goals with the kids because we're heavily focused on the outcomes. And I really wanted the kids to really be embedded in the process, that Spartan mindset of wanting to do this, wanting to take that journey and enjoy the journey more than the destination. But one of their goals as a team was to win a state cup, which is a big deal here in the States. You know, so they're the best team in Ohio in their age group. And they the very first year that we were together, we didn't make it. And it was one of our only losses. We'd lost like once or twice in like 860 games or something crazy like that. They were a phenomenal group of players. And they wanted that as a goal. And we talked it through. We always set our goals. I always worked with them, but they were their goals, so I could hold them accountable and help guide the process, but they had to be theirs. They had to own them. And this was a goal they wanted. So winning state cup was a goal. We're in the state cup semifinals, and one particular player had not been doing well over the past couple months. He'd fallen a little bit behind in his development and skill. I think it was affecting his confidence. So then he was starting to play even, you know, he was in that position where he was spiraling, that the mindset was lost, and he was in that fixed mindset spiral. And he was having a particularly difficult game in the semifinals. And in that heat of the battle and the moment, several of the players are like, "Coach, he's really struggling. You've got to help him. You've got to get him out. You've got to help him." They were always very communicative. And they're like, "Coach, you know, he needs your help. So I pulled this player out to talk to him to make sure he was okay. I didn't do it after he made a mistake or anything. He didn't know he'd made a mistake. It was a regular sub. And he wasn't emotionally and mentally there, and he was really struggling. And I made the mistake of not getting him back in the game. And he should have gone in at one of the rotations. He should have gone back in. He came up to me and he said, "Hey, coach, I'd like to go in." And I turned to him in the heat of the moment and said, "Just a second, I'll get to you in a second." And I'd never did that. I always had always tried to have meaningful conversations with my players. I broke this kid's heart. He didn't show up the next day for the state championship game. He was heartbroken because I'd always been this encouraging coach. And in that moment, I wasn't mean. I wasn't nasty, but you don't have to be mean or nasty. It's just, if you're dismissive or exclusive, if you exclude somebody from a situation, or you make them feel excluded, or you make them feel less than, or take away their meaning or purpose, you can really do some harm. And that is one that I, to this day, regret. And it changed the way I looked at every athlete. Like, we won the state championship. Was it worth it? Not for that kid. I had a team of 12 or 13 kids, and all of them benefited but him. So I failed one kid. And from my perspective, that's a massive failure. Should never fail any kid. I hope, you know, he did go on to continue to play, thankfully, because you never want to be a child's last coach. Because that means you drove them away from the sport. They quit, and that's because of you. And you drove them away from the opportunity to develop as a better human being because you took that away from them by forcing them to quit. And it's always affected how I respond now. I no longer react to things with athletes. I try very hard to take a moment, process, and respond and understand emotionally where they are and where I am. Because my going, "I'll get to you in a second," and being dismissive because we're in the middle of an extremely heated game, and we're only up 1-0, and it's the other team is battering our goal, and they're going to tie it, and we may not make it to the state championships. That didn't matter. What mattered was I should have looked him in the eyes and been honest with him in that moment, and I should have I should have given him that intentionality, and I didn't. So it's always shaped how I've looked at interactions.
Okay, well, I'm pretty sure, you know, that kid would have felt really terrible at that point of time, but at least, you know, even though you won the state championship for Ohio, but still it is something that, you know, it's always that memorable for that kid, because it's so painful to be excluded by the coach, in a sense. And of course, every player would not want to be a substitute all the time, or even a reserve all the time. They want to be exposed to the environment where they can shine, they can actually show their strengths in the matches and all this other stuff, be it in a Premier League or MLS or even NBA as well, or even cricket or sailing and all this other stuff. So I'm pretty sure, you know, it's never easy for a player to feel that way, because their life depends on it, in a sense. Their life depends on that career. Even though we might be thinking as a sports lover, we love the sport, but we are not playing them. But all these people, you know, they might be sitting on sidelines earning good damn lots of money, like, you know, what, 300,000 per week or whatever amount that they are being paid for, and they can buy whatever they want, do whatever they want, but, you know, their passion is in that sport, and if we stop them, then it's gone for them, in a sense. And wow, I really, you know, understand how you feel about the kid for that point of time, as well as, you know, going through that process. And in the end, do you still keep in contact with that boy, or has he ever like reached out to you anymore?
No, he went on to another club the next season. I think he was from Italy. I think they moved back to Italy, if I'm not mistaken. But it's always been one that's been on my mind. When I hear from other players, I'm always excited to hear from them. But it's one that I hope that it was a blip. I mean, I've had my situations. I've got some instances in my past when I was a player that coaches did things that, you know, they do stick with you. But I'm hoping that it was a small speed bump that he's well beyond now.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Oh, wow. Man, okay. So, you know, speaking of failures, you have already mentioned about it. How about success? What is the best success moment you've ever like experienced with any team that you have coached so far?
Any team?
Yeah.
I would say that the biggest success that I've had in my career was with a team, but it wasn't a team of athletes. It was a team. I've had some amazing teams, so I'm taking nothing away from the athletes I've worked with and the teams I've worked with. But I was working with U.S. Sailing, and they were creating this Siebel Sailors program. So they got the tech company, Siebel. Siebel gave a donation to invest in community sailing. And the idea is that sailing is it feels like an exclusive sport. And so they wanted to make it more accessible to communities and show that anybody can sail. So they wanted to provide the resources and the training to get more kids on the water, because it's a lifelong sport like golf that if you do pick it up, if you aren't able to do it, it's something you can do all the way into your 70s and 80s. I don't play soccer anymore at 49, but I could sail. I could learn tomorrow and I could sail well into my 70s. So Siebel, right. The point behind the program was to put these hubs around the United States. And these hubs would be at locations where a bunch of other sailing centers and harbors and ports and sailing teams would be close enough that they could come to the hub, and they provided boats, they provided life jackets, they provided, you know, all the coaching. And so what they would do is they'd do all this community outreach to bring as many kids as possible to sailing, and they funded the sailing process for all these kids. So they would do these group classes that would last so many weeks or months, you know, season, and the coaches would walk the kids through it. What was really great was when I was brought in to work with this team, what they needed the most was developing the mission and the values and the rules of engagement for an organization, of how they were going to interact with their athletes and how they, and these habits of excellence that I work on with companies a lot. And so that was my biggest victory, because we spent several months crafting what this organization would look like, what its purpose was, and what these values were, and how we'd extend them to the kids. And out of all that work, we came up with some really amazing values, and then some habits of excellence attached to it, so we could live those values every day. Because core values are just words on a website or words on a wall or words we use, but they have no meaning until we actually put behaviors behind them. So you have to turn core values into core behaviors. And they carefully crafted these core behaviors that kids could learn when they were at the sailing centers, and that coaches would transmit and teach. And we trained a bunch of coaches to do it. We set it all up. Well, 3 years later, I'm at the leadership forum a couple months ago with U.S. Sailing, and they presented their data. They have turned into their goal as Siebel Sailors, the leaders of it now, the ones that I worked with. They still want to put kids on boats and provide the resources and everything, but they found out where they're best served is developing the coaches and developing the framework for these kids to have success in sailing and beyond. And their results are astounding. They were showing they would check in with the children regularly to find out if they'd learned the values, where they were applying the values, and how much they knew about the values as they went through. So it was all this soft skill work, and we put some data behind it. And their data was showing the kids were picking up these values at a 90% pickup rate, and they would remember them weeks and months later, and the behaviors attached to them, they would remember them. So these kids knew exactly what gratitude meant by the behaviors they were exhibiting, or inclusivity by the behaviors they were exhibiting. And that was I'm sitting in the back of the room and they're giving their presentation and they toss up there the original values sheet that we had worked on a team where we had mapped out like 20 or 30 values as a team, and then we narrowed it down to our top five. And then from the top five, we started talking through what they meant and why they were important and really assigning meaning to them and all of that. They threw that sheet up on the slideshow and showed the original sheet that we had all worked on in Durham, North Carolina back in 2019. And I started tearing up because I realized what a huge success for all of them. What an amazing thing to be a part of, to build this that's now got 10 centers and they're serving thousands of children. And in the beginning, all it was a group of five or six of us who got together and said, let's change the world. So that's probably one of my biggest successes, to see how far they've come without me. And that's the beauty. As a coach, your goal is to create these people who can they can function at a high level without you having to be there.
Yeah, I agree. This is the purpose of a coach. Wow, amazing. And you know, I'm pretty sure during your journey of trials and tribulations, successes, you would have met a lot of mentors, right? So can you share with us, like, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received from your mentor?
Oh my goodness, I could probably fill a book with just the advice I've gotten from mentors. But Jane Nelson was my mentor in recent years. She was from Positive Discipline, and she'd written 25 books, and she'd been doing it for 40 some years, and she stumbled across my TEDx and asked if we would partner and do tools for coaches. So we did the Positive Discipline. They do it in the classroom, in the workplace, in the marriage, at home, all of that. And we did one for coaches. And we worked tirelessly for months and months together, the two of us at coffee shops and at her condo and at my place developing these tools. And then we partnered with Soccer Shots. And so Soccer Shots had exclusive tools for coaches, PD tools made just for them. And I was training all the Soccer Shots franchise owners and going to headquarters and all of this stuff and everything. And then the world shut down. It just 2019, I had parted ways with a business partner who just we didn't have the same values. We weren't on the same page. And it just, I wasn't going to change who I was, and I wasn't going to turn my back on my values. I feel strongly in my core values, and I have core behaviors built around them. My Spartan mindset is built on that. My whole career was staked on the value system I had, and we were just weren't the same. And I was devastated. I was absolutely devastated. I lost a lot in the process. And honestly, I didn't know if when the world shut down in early 2020, I didn't know if I'd ever return to this. I thought, this is gone. Me writing a book, me doing speaking engagements, me being on shows and sharing knowledge with the world and learning from people like you, I thought it was over and done. And she and I met for coffee, and I was just really struggling. And she said to me, you need to step out of the shadows, buddy. She goes, you always want to hide behind somebody else. You always want to, because you have this imposter syndrome that you're not good enough to do it on your own. So you always need to rely on somebody. And she said, that business partner of yours, you never needed those people. She said, you're better off without them. She says, it's you. You have the magic. She goes, you need to step out of the shadows and let the world see your magic and stop being so afraid of actually having some kind of influence on the world on your own. And it stuck with me. I was almost being admonished at the same time as being advised, and it stuck with me. And so when the opportunity for the book came up to finally publish it this past year, I said, yeah, I'm stepping out of the shadows. I've got to share this, because the biggest thing is she's 80 something. She says, I have no regrets. Are you going to be 80 and have regrets? So that was the best piece of advice I'd gotten from a mentor.
Wow. Love it. I love this advice. If you're going to be 80, are you going to have regrets? So guys and girls who are tuning in, listen to that advice and ask yourself, are you going to have regrets when you're 80, 90? Wow, amazing. And if you have regrets, then you better buck up and go and do something and get out of shadows, because if not now, then when? Right. And wow, I love what Reed has mentioned a lot about this. And now I would like to ask you, right, if you could have a gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, what would it say and why?
Oh man, there's so many. Again, there's so many great things. I would have to say that right now it's been I always had a quote that was, it's not what you get when you arrive, it's who you become along the way. And that would have been, I would have said a couple months ago, that would probably be what I put on the billboard. But lately, I had one the other day that I said to somebody, and I've started writing it in my books when I sign them for people. Because we're in this world now where we're trying to look for people to follow us. We're trying to lead and influence people, and we're in industries where we're trying to actually be the trendsetter in the industry or the disruptor. And so the billboard for me would say, speak loudly, people hear. Speak knowledgeably, people listen. Speak lovingly, people follow. We need more of that. We need, not only do we need to speak knowledgeably with people, but we need to speak with love and kindness, because people want to follow somebody that not only do they see as an expert and believe in, and but somebody they trust, somebody they admire, somebody they respect. And loving language, the kind of language that is kind and gentle and demanding, we can demand things from people without demeaning them. That kind of language used with people, that's when you have followers who will follow you to the ends of the earth. And so if you're an entrepreneur, speak lovingly, be genuine and speak lovingly.
Wow, love it. This is absolutely amazing. I love this quote that you have. And this don't just applies to adults, but it also applies to kids, young adults as well, because teenagers, all these people would want to have somebody to follow, and they need someone to express it out with kindness and not someone who just keeps scolding and telling them what to do, ordering them, like as if they're so bossy in front of them, like they are adults, so they should listen to this adult. But no, it's not this case. And wow, I love what you have mentioned. This quote, everyone should actually paste it on your wall, write it down, paste it on your wall, and remember it for life, and just keep practicing it. Man, wow, love it. And, you know, now we are going to the main focus of our interview. Can you tell us what inspired you to write your new book, The Spartan Mindset?
So The Spartan Mindset was written, I wrote it 5 years ago. And so it's taken that long to actually come to print. It was what inspired me was I was doing a lot of work at the time. I was doing a lot of workshops. I had this workshop called Warriors Not Winners. And the idea was that we could create these highly competitive, psychologically strong, mentally strong competitors. And we would steer us away from this win at all costs mentality that we're now seeing in sports. There's this heavy win at all costs, selfishness, the meltdowns that we're seeing, some of the, you know, if you track with U.S. soccer, what just happened with the men's national team after the World Cup and stuff like that. Like, we need to create these competitors more so than we do to create winners. And so this workshop was, I did it with a lot of organizations. I'd get calls just, hey, can you come and do the Warriors Not Winners workshop? Or, hey, can you come and give a speech to our conference about Warriors Not Winners and what it means? And so I morphed that into being a language guy. I had morphed that into, okay, so when we're in these environments and we're talking about locus of control and intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation and competitive mentalities, and these were all pieces of the Warriors Not Winners workshop. I was five major psychological concepts. It's now like 12. I've got it up to 12. But when we would talk about those, I realized that language really played a role in this. So I created a second one called Warrior Brains. How do we build warrior brains in children? And we use certain words, and I took a lot of liberty because it's not how it happens, but I would throw a brain up there during my presentations, and different parts of the brain would light up based on different words. And so I would say, you know, if you speak with love, the amygdala lights up, and what you're doing is you're reducing the impact of the fear center, because when somebody feels loved, then the fear center doesn't get activated. So then they don't fight, flight, flee, or freeze, you know, so you reduce choking. And if you use, you know, other words, then you're going to light up the logic process of the brain, ownership and responsibility and vision. You're going to light up the vision process of the brain when you talk to athletes about what they want, what they see in themselves, things like that. And so I'm working on that presentation, and my son sits down next to me, and I start walking him through why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I said, yeah, you know, instead of this word, use this word. And instead of this word, use this word. And it'll light up this part of the brain and all that. And my son goes, you should write a book about words, Dad. You really love talking about words, and I'd become very intentional. That big failure with that one young athlete and other situations, I'd become very intentional about what I said to people. And so we made a challenge. I'll write the book. It'll be 30 years of research and experience and two master's degrees behind it, and everything my mentors have ever said to me and everything that I've ever learned from other people, and I'll throw it all in this book. I'll put my heart and soul in it. And so we mapped it out, and his challenge to me was, I want you to write it in a month, because I needed to start writing more. I needed to flex that muscle. And so we decided I was going to write 1,000 words a day until it was done. Well, 1,000 words quickly turned into a chapter a day, because I'd get to write. I always mapped my chapters out ahead of time. I do it with my talks too. I don't always have exactly what I'm going to say, but I've got my bullet points. These are the things I need to touch on. These are the learning objectives. This is what I want the audience to learn. These are the big takeaways for them. And then this is the framework in which we'll present it so that they can absorb it in their way. And so I had each chapter mapped out like that. I'd sit down and I'd get 1,000 words in and I'd go, well, why stop there? I should just finish the chapter. So I finished the book. I finished the book on September 2nd, 2017. And the day that I submitted the final manuscript and said, go to print to my publisher, was September 2nd, 2022. So exactly 5 years to the day, the book finally became a reality. After I'd written it, this is what's cool. I know that because when I submitted the go-to print email to the editor, to the publisher, I sent the final manuscript, all the major edits, and said, go to print. We're good to go. I've double-checked everything. I opened up Facebook to post about it, and there was a memory from 5 years prior where I said, I just got done writing a 40,000 word book. I'm going to take a break. So that's how the book came out. And okay. It sounds so whimsical to say, oh, I wrote it in a month, but it's 30 years worth of research packed into a month of writing.
Right. And I enjoyed reading it, even though I haven't finished it yet, but it's really amazing. You guys should go and check it out. Once it's out, you can go to the physical bookstores in wherever you are, go and check it out as well, and you can buy it through online Amazon as well. It's going to be something that will impact your life, and it has impacted my mindset already, and that's why I'm really blessed to have the author of The Spartan Mindset to come here to speak with us. And of course, you know, we were talking so much about the Spartan mindset. Can you elaborate a bit more on what is it all about?
Yes. Yeah, so I think about this a lot because we came up with the title because I tell two stories about the Spartans. In my journey to find good stories, each chapter is a word or a phrase. And then each chapter begins with a story where that word or phrase was used in real life, so that it gives an example, you know, brings it to life. And then I go through all the science behind it and tips and hints and all that. And so in my journey to find stories for the words that I was going to put in the book, I found these stories about the Spartans. And I thought, wow, these are two extremely powerful stories that show the power of a single word and how it's not just a performance thing. Like, it changed the course of a nation. It changed the outcome of history. One word. Like, that's amazing. And so we named it the Spartan Mindset, keeping with that theme of the Spartans. Every society, especially the ancient ones, they have their issues. We have our issues in the U.S. today, no doubt about it. So I'm not right. Subscribing to the Spartan society, but that mindset, they were very good at two things. They were extremely competitive. They were warriors, extremely competitive society, high performance, like definition. And the other thing that they were known for is that laconic language, that very terse, sharp, short, concise, succinct language that they used. When they said something, right. Everybody listened, and it had power. So that's why it's called the Spartan Mindset. But makes me think, what is this? For me, the Spartan Mindset's always what I've worked on with my teams, with athletes, with organizations. It's that it's a muscle. It's an ethos. It's a way of living. It's a way of thinking. It's for us, the Spartan, the mindset really is, how are we taking in information around us? How are we then processing that information? Then how is that shaping how we think, feel, and then ultimately act? So the mindset is that framework that we use, that source code, like we were talking about before the show of a computer. The Spartan Mindset is the source code. What is the source code of a computer that allows it to function at its highest capabilities? If you're not honing that every day, if you're not working on that code and taking out errors and bug fixing and all of that, you will have performance chokes. You'll have these situations where you choke in high stress, high performance situations. So the Spartan Mindset is all about, just like a muscle, it's developing this source code, this way of living, this way of thinking and interacting with the world and framing. So I may have a negative day and negative thoughts, but I need to learn how to reframe, rewire, and then respond from a different perspective. And that's the Spartan Mindset. The four values that I've attached to it that really matter are focus, respect, grit, and discipline. And they spell forged, which is why I say we forged the Spartan Mindset. And so, you know, in there is resilience. Spartan mindset is, it's about not just bouncing back from difficulties, but when we're faced with obstacles or adversities, it, realizing that sometimes we're going to bounce back from, we will fail. So what is our next, how do we respond to failure? Sometimes it's innovating around them. Sometimes an obstacle isn't to be bounced back from. It's, we have to figure out another way to innovate around it, to disrupt, to as an entrepreneur, to solve that problem. And then the third thing about the Spartan mindset is its adaptability. If you look at how they train elite level athletes or armed forces, they put them in situations where the brain actually says, I'm done, and then they go for 40% more because the body can keep going if you don't listen to that voice. And so the Spartan mindset is sometimes understanding we have to get comfortable being uncomfortable. That's just life. As an entrepreneur, days are going to really, sorry to use it this way, suck. And as I've got friends that say it, and I don't remember who, David Goggins or Jocko Willink or somebody said, sometimes you just got to embrace the suck, right? So that's the Spartan mindset, is knowing that if you can stay in that uncomfortable space and learn to function at your highest level within that uncomfortable space, you're going to come out the other side stretched to be even better than you were. You adapted. And that's the Spartan mindset as well, is adapting to the world around us so that we come out stronger than we were before. Better than we were yesterday. And here's the beauty. It has nothing to do with comparing. Your Spartan mindset is different from mine. My son and I are lifting again. My son, he looks like he was carved out of marble. I don't. We joke that he's the bodybuilder. I'm the one where they go, he might be a power lifter because he's a pretty big dude, you know? So I can't look at his journey and say, well, I'm not where he is. I'm not 10% body fat and cut out of marble. I've got to look at my journey. I can't compare myself because comparison is the thief of joy. So the Spartan mindset is being able to be competitive within yourself, not against the people around you. The people around you are allies in your competitive spirit.
Wow, love it. And, you know, just now when you were mentioning about Jocko, yes, embrace the suck. I actually watched his YouTube videos when I was down and out in 2020, and I was like, whoa, I chanced upon his podcast, and I really loved his energy and the things that he said. Really good, awesome guy. Hopefully you can one day can get him on my podcast as well, and even David Goggins as well. Really amazing. And right then, how do people develop the Spartan mindset?
Well, the big one is, like I said, it's a muscle, so you have to train it every day. It's not something you're born with. It's not a fixed thing, it's a growth thing. And it's something that it will, just like a muscle, it will atrophy, but you can create hypertrophy by working on it every day. So think about, one of the ways you can train it is be intentional, be self-aware. Think about the things that happen to you in your world and think about your thoughts about them. Like, I had a rough day, and what was my first thought? Write them down if you get a chance. That's what I was told somebody the other day. You know, you want to help your resilience. Get to the end of the day and write down all the negative comments that you said to yourself and all the positive. And what will be amazing is the negative will outweigh the positive, because our biggest critic is our brain. The one person who should love us the most is our own voice, and yet our own voice can be so abusive to us. And so training the Spartan mindset is becoming more self-aware of when we are framing things in a way that are negative for us, or when we are reacting to situations emotionally versus responding strategically. It's listening to your own language, to yourself, your own voice. Give yourself a break. Just be kind to yourself. Speak lovingly to yourself once in a while and listen to your voice and be aware of it. And then to really train it, you start changing some of the ways you see things or think things or say things. So, you know, like for instance, let's say my son says, oh, Dad, you got to drive me all the way to San Marcos, which is about a 45-minute drive for me, for a volleyball game. So my thought process could be one of two. Ugh, I have to drive to San Marcos. Or I get to spend time with my son in the car and I get to see my son play volleyball. Like, that's a difference in my reframing what I'm just reframing that thought process, which is going to rewire how I think about things. Or if I make a mistake and say, God, that was stupid, Reed. Now look what you've done. You've made a mess. Or I could say, wow, what a learning moment. I guess I'm going to learn from what I just did. You know, like, look at things as opportunities. Challenges aren't obstacles. They're opportunities to grow. They're opportunities to learn. That starts to train a Spartan mindset when you start to shift and reframe how you process information and then how you interact with the world given that information you just processed.
Yeah. Wow. Love it. I agree with you. And can you tell us, are words really that powerful when it comes to shaping our performance?
What is most powerful in shaping performance?
Words.
Oh, words. Yes, they are. And I'll give you an I'll give you an example.
Okay.
I was just watching the World Cup. I was watching the World Series, and it was I'm a Padres fan because I live in San Diego now, so I'm now a Padres fan. And the Padres were playing, I believe, the Mets, and the divisional title, I think it was, and may not have been the Mets, but anyway, the pitcher, the Padres have the pitcher in a real pickle. They've got bases loaded, and you know, a couple balls already, and they bring in a new pitcher, and they've got, I can't remember if it's Soto or Machado or somebody up to bat who's dangerous at the plate. And the announcer said they had Tom Glavine, I believe, was in the I'm trying to remember the pitcher, but it's a famous Atlanta Braves pitcher, and he's in the commentary booth. And the analyst says to him, he says, What are you saying to a pitcher in this moment? What would you say? What would you want your coach to say to you? And he says, I'll tell you what you shouldn't do. Don't use the word don't. Don't say to a pitcher, don't throw strikes. Don't throw it over the plate. Don't let him hit a home run. Because don't is that word that our brain does not know how to process. Don't is that word that our brain, when we say don't, we can't visualize what no means. We can visualize like don't run. We know what running means. So we can visualize. We can see running. But what does don't mean? What if you see, like, I saw Simon Sinek do a show one time where he was standing in front of an audience and he said, I'm going to tell you something and I want you not to picture it. Do not do this. Don't think of an elephant. Everybody in the room thought of an elephant. So that right there. So his point was, and that's one of the words in the book. I was like, oh, thank you for mentioning that. His point was, is you change the performance the moment you do that. That is a word that alters somebody's performance. Bob Rotella talks about in his book, golf is not a game of perfect. If you're standing on the tee box and there's water to the right and a very thin strip of land to the left, when you're standing over that ball, if your last thought is don't hit it in the water, your brain goes, okay, hit it in the water, I heard you, and you hit it in the water. So that's how powerful words are in performance, is they trigger processes in the brain. There's a brain-body connection that's been proven through research with imagery, with skiers like Jean-Claude Killy, who, when they attached electrodes to his leg muscles and walked him through imagery, he wasn't actually skiing, he was sitting in a chair, but they walked him into the very vivid, very specific imagery using the right words. His muscles innervated as if they were trying to work. So they were showing activity in the brain and in the legs that his body was prepped by those words. That's how powerful a single word can be.
Okay. Wow. Interesting. This is what I read from a book, and I realized that, man, words are really, really incredible, because this is something that we use for ourselves. It's a language that we use for ourselves. And yeah. I would like to ask you, right, what are some of the words, you know, that actually shut down peak performance? Because just now you were saying some things that can help you to, you know, do something and something that you really unintentionally want to do it, but then somehow you did it by hitting the ball into the water, for example, and things like that. So what are the words that shut down peak performance?
Sure. And before I tell you, going back to what we were talking about earlier, the computer analogy, these are malware words. These are words, you know, every time we speak, we're writing code on brains of people that we work with. We're not exactly computers, but the words that we use, the words that you use with other people and the words that you use externally become your own words. So if somebody's telling me, like you were talking about earlier, if somebody's telling me a lot of positive thoughts, then that becomes the code that's written on my brain, and that becomes the brain processing that I do. And the hardware only runs as good as the software. So if I want my body to perform at peak, I've got to make sure that the software that's being written on my brain allows me to perform at peak. There are words that are malware. There are words that people have put in our brains. There are things that people have said to us. There are things that maybe in passing somebody has said that has impacted us so much that it's caused a traumatic brain experience for us, and it becomes malware and it chokes up our performance. Some of the words in the book that we talk about that can be those potential malware words, those peril words, are but. Because but is the stinkiest part of the conversation. Usually somebody's going to give you a compliment and they're going to say but, and here comes the negative. Everything they said before that word, you forget. And all you notice is the stench of what came after the but. So yeah. But is a word that can chop performance. Don't is another one. Don't hit it in the water. Don't make a mistake. Don't lose this game. That's when you see athletes playing tight, when the announcer says, oh boy, they're playing really tight. They're trying not to lose. Yeah, because you're using the word don't. You should be flipping the script and using something more positive. Can't is one of those words Carol Dweck talks about in her Power of Yet TED talk. Yeah. Can't is one of those words that shuts everything down. I can't do it. Well, you just put up an obstacle, you just hit a stop sign, and now you fatally have shut it down. So she says, oh, no, yet, you can't yet. Try. Try is another one I put out there. And this one, a couple reasons why. One, because every time my kids ask for something, like, hey, Dad, can we go for ice cream? I go, ah, we'll try. And then one day I saw the frown and the rearview mirror from my one son. I said, what's up, buddy? Why are you upset? He says, because when you say try, it means we're actually not going to. You know. And so think about it. When somebody says, hey, you coming by my 2-year-old's birthday party this weekend? Oh, I'll try. And now you've given it your best effort, but you're excused because you didn't do it. So when an athlete, when a performer says try, they're giving themselves and everybody around them an excuse for not getting it done versus the word will, which says, no, I will get this done. We will do this. We will accomplish this. So those are some of the big peril words that I talk about in the book.
Yep, I agree. And of course, yes, there's also one word that I saw, which was really powerful, because I remember the first chapter that was actually stated was Philip II wanted to go and conquer Spartans, and then after that he wrote there this powerful word called if, and then after that Spartans returned the message to them with a circle on the if, and I was like, okay, he decided not to go for a war after that. and he stopped, right?
So yes,
yeah.
Hugely powerful word.
Yeah, I agree. And then what are some of the words that can enhance peak performance?
Sure. So some of the words that I talk about enhancing peak performance are will, especially when somebody is struggling with a skill or something and they say, oh, I can't do this or I won't be able to do this. No, you will. And now we have to back that will up with the resources and the tools and the support that you need. But we will get this done. And I tell the story of John F. Kennedy telling an entire nation, telling a world, announcing to a world that we were going to set foot on the moon. Really? Like, we just started flying in planes 50 years prior, you know, between a couple of people, including the Wright brothers. We finally got humans in a plane, and we flew for a very short distance, and now we're finally flying. But you're talking about only 50 years of evolution of that technology, and you're going to put somebody – you're going to strap them to a big Roman candle or whatever they call them, a big firecracker, and send it into space and get enough escape velocity to get out of our gravitational pull, and then they're going to float through a vacuum and land on a random rock so far away that we're not even sure if the math matches up to get them on that rock. Really? But he never said, if we put a person on the moon, if we maybe we could, we'll try. He said, will. We will put somebody on the moon. We will accomplish this as a nation. And then he backed it up with the funding and the resources and all the smartest minds to get it done. And he changed space travel for all of us, not just U.S., but the whole world suddenly realized this is something possible. Another power word that that I have in the book, actually I've got the book here. I always have it on my desk because I end up, I'm doing my own book study, and that's one of the courses that I'll have when the book comes out. When you accomplish this, what would that feel like when you do it? Instead of, oh, I don't know if I'll ever do it. No, when you do it, when you get this done, yet, like Carol Dweck said, yet. I have a whole chapter in the book on the word next, because a lot of performers get caught in that quagmire of when they make a mistake, they get stuck in that quicksand, and they can't step out of the fatality of the mistake. They can't move on emotionally and mentally. And so you can just see a performer who's made a massive mistake. You can just see the wheels still turning minutes later, like, oh, they're still stuck in this. And I had a friend of mine who would always use the phrase next, next, like, don't worry, you'll get it on the next try. Don't worry, you'll get it on the next shot. Don't worry, we'll get the next goal. Don't worry, you know, you'll make your million the next month. So next moves people on. It stops that spiraling, that spinning, and gets them onto a positive forward action. Those are, and then two of the most powerful words that were ever used with me, my wife used it, and she used the word if, which is so phenomenal, but she reframed it in a different way. She said, what if? What if you could be a coach full time? What if you could pursue your passion, Reed? What would that be like? You just created this future, this image in somebody's head. You gave them a visual to latch onto, something that they could actually see and feel. And so now they're going to chase it with everything they have. What if you could have a $1 million company? What if you could break a world record? What if?
Wow. Love it. What if? This is something that you guys who are tuning in should actually fall in love with this word, what if, and also you will and you can. And of course, all these amazing words that you're going to find in the book itself, you're going to enjoy it and you're going to appreciate whatever Reed has actually done for us, and that is creating this amazing manuscript, amazing book for us to actually learn and to devour and to practice them and to make it a reality for us. And I would like to ask you, right, do you have an example of when a single word changed your life? Well, other than what if?
Yeah. Single word, probably a lot of moments, but a single word changing my life. In our household, the word can't came out a lot, especially when our children were younger. And we decided to come up with this acronym that can't stood for challenge accepted, no take backs. And so when somebody in our household said, I can't, we either respond with a Carol Dweck, yet, you can't yet, but you will. Or we respond with challenge accepted, no take backs, which meant if you say I can't and somebody challenges you, we're all competitive. You have to accept the challenge now. You have to do it. Sorry, challenge accepted, and you can't take it back. You already put it out in the world. So, and how it changed my life was I use that all the time with my kids, and I was kitschy about it, and I was like, this is my saying. And what I didn't think about was my own kids would use it on me. And so I went through some back issues for quite a few years, to the point where when I traveled, I'd shove myself in a metal tube and, you know, fly at 25,000 feet in pressurized tube, sleeping on hotel beds, getting up on stages and doing workshops, and, you know, all day. That by the time I'd get home from a trip, I could barely walk, let alone, like, I couldn't even lift. My family did all the lifting. If something was over 5 pounds, I was saying, can you pick that up? Can you lift that? And here I am, a former athlete, pretty big dude, used to lift pretty heavily, and I can't even lift anything for fear of having these awful back spasms that would lay me out for days. And I lived in fear. And so I didn't go too far into the water because I was afraid that the cold of the water would cause a back spasm. I didn't surf. I didn't any of this. And one day we're driving by the beach. My kids were still young enough. And my wife said, we should all do surf lessons. And I said, I can't, my back. And from the back seat, I hear this little voice go, challenge accepted, no take backs. And it was my son calling me on the carpet. So I've yet to learn to surf, but it set in motion a series of events that led my wife to say, let's go hiking more often. Let's work those glutes. Let's get you into yoga. Let's get you. So hiking and jogging and doing these activities and being more mobile. And then she became a yoga teacher. And so I was going to her yoga classes. And then my son walks in one day and pulls the challenge accepted, no take back. He's lifting and he's loving it, but he says, I need an accountability partner. I need somebody to lift with me. And you used to be a pretty heavy lifter, Dad. Why don't you lift with me? And I said, oh, buddy, my back, I can't. And he said, no. Challenge accepted, no take backs. That was on like a Thursday. And the following Monday, we signed up for a gym membership, and I've been lifting with him ever since. And I'm now lifting. This is crazy. At 49 years old, I'm lifting more weight at 49 than I did when I was in my 20s. Still have back issues. But him, my family using the can't on me changed my life because I feel like a different person. And I feel like I have so many more years left, and it changed how I see myself. I don't see myself as this aging, decaying robot. No, I see myself as this thriving, I'm just beginning my journey, human being, and I feel like I could go forever.
Nice. Wow, love it. And wow, look at you. You are able to lift way more than how you killed it 20, 30 years ago. And man, look at yourself, man. It's a great accomplishment for you, even though you have some back issues. And kudos to your son for encouraging you to do that. And I'm pretty sure he has some rigged body, like, you know, like, so those, if you watch wrestling, like Lex Luger kind of thing.
He's pretty shredded.
Oh, nice.
The cool thing is I'm bonding with him. I'm bonding with, my daughter's, significant other. I'm bonding with them. I'm bonding with, my other son. I'm bonding with my wife, 'cause she now wants to work out. My son brings his, all of his classmates around, and I'm bonding with them. So it wasn't just the working out, him, them using can't opened up a world where I just gained these new experiences with these people. And at 49, it's proof that that Spartan mindset exists throughout our lives, and it's a muscle. You got to work it.
Yep, totally. And I would like to ask you, right, this Spartan mindset, from a sports perspective, how can it help entrepreneurs to thrive in their own businesses?
I'm glad you asked that, because everything I do is from a sports background, and that's because I know what I know. And that's the easiest way for me to couch things. That's the easiest way for me to frame things, is coming from the sports world. And a lot of the stories come from the sports world. But this is something that we can apply in any performance situation. If you strip away the field and you strip away the ball and you strip away the other pieces and factors of it, sports and entrepreneurship are one and the same. It's about being competitive. It's about creating competitive advantage. It's about having that mental strength. It's about having that fortitude. It's about having that resilience. And there is that nature of learning from your mistakes, of growth, of acquiring new skills. It's no different from picking up a sport is trying to run a company. Obviously, there's other pieces that are vastly different. But deep down, some of the psychological concepts that occur and some of the mindset pieces that come into play in sports and entrepreneurship are very much the same. Translating the Spartan mindset to entrepreneurship is, again, it's just like in a game. When you make a mistake, don't let it be fatal. See it as a learning opportunity, as a growth opportunity. When you are communicating with others about what you do, you've got to be just as clear as a coach or a teammate is in communicating what they need from you on the sports field. So hone your message, communicate effectively with your customers and with your clients and with your teammates. It's understanding that it's about the journey. For me in sports, we always try to get our athletes to understand that it is, like I said earlier, it's not about what you get when you arrive. It's about who you become along the way. And the best part about sports is that journey, is being in the process. Don't worry about the results. Focus on the process. Fine tune the process. The results will come if you get it down pat. Just like in sports, when you train and you set up strong plays and you set up strong processes and you train regularly, entrepreneurs who make sure that the infrastructure is in place, they have all the right people on the same page, and that they're messaging in the right ways, those results come for them because they focused on the process less than they did the results. It's that competitive mindset of understanding that, yes, you're going to have competitors, but they aren't enemies. They are allies. The root word of competition is competere, which is to strive together. And just as in sports, if I have a competitor out there who's better than me, instead of hating them, I'm going to study them. I'm going to compete against them. And when I lose, that's okay. I've learned how to beat them. Or I'm going to study and understand what they do well and what they don't do well, and how they're messaging to their customers, and how their customer service is, and what makes their product so much better. And then I can find ways to learn from them so that I become better. So see the people around you as competitors in your own journey to excellence. And those are really the areas where it crosses over. My three areas that I think affect performance the most are learning, language, and leadership. Learning is, are we setting up the right environments for the people around us to acquire the skills they need to succeed? That goes for business. Language is, are we communicating in a high-performance way that allows us to effectively help others perform better in high-stress, high-performance situations? Business. And then the final piece is leadership. Are we leading in a way that empowers people to be independent problem solvers who are excited that we're around so we can share in the successes, aren't afraid to see us coming, don't fear us as leaders, and of course, don't need us? When you have employees who are empowered to solve problems for the greater good, and they can do it without you standing over your shoulder, you've replicated yourself. You've scaled yourself. You now have 80 of you working for your company. That's where, as a coach in sports, when I could get 11 athletes on the field all functioning the same, and they didn't need to look to the sideline for my help, they were solving the problems on their own, and I was just sitting there taking notes and enjoying the game, we were all succeeding. And it transfers over to business.
Yeah, totally. And I love what you mentioned earlier. We are all competing with our competitors, but we are competing towards our excellence because we are learning from them rather than hating on them. So, wow, I love what you've mentioned. And as we are actually coming to the end of our podcast, we have one last question for you, and that is this. Reed, imagine this. You suddenly lose everything. your money, your reputation, what will you do from day one to day 30 to save yourself?
Kind of doing it now. I mean, I didn't lose everything, but I left this world for almost three years to run a nonprofit here in San Diego. And so I wasn't speaking, I wasn't engaging with companies, I wasn't consulting, and so I did have to start from scratch. So what I would do is build those relationships, reestablish those connections. I found out very quickly, returning to this world, I found out very quickly who I had strong relationships with and who I didn't, because it was the people who I had strong relationships with who were like, oh my gosh, welcome back, let's do something together. There are other people who left me on read, who when I messaged them, you know, read it and then didn't want anything to do with me. It didn't make me upset or angry at them or anything. It told me where my audience is, where my partners are, where my true allies are. And that's important. So those connections matter. The other piece is getting into conversations with people that are meaningful and add value. In the first 30 days, you've got to get out there and establish yourself as an expert. You've got to establish yourself as a brand. Whatever it is you're selling or doing, you are a brand in and of yourself, just like your company. And you need to establish yourself as a trusted, expert, efficient, effective brand. And so in those first 30 days, it's important that you're messaging around. The other big one for me is probably before you ever even start those 30 days, is to get extremely clear on your mission. What are you trying to do? What is it that makes you so passionate that you would wake up every day to do it and that you actually love being in it when you're doing it? And make sure you're also conveying that mission to the world. If people know your purpose, if people know why you're doing what you're doing, they're going to be intrigued, they're going to be interested, and they're going to want to follow you. If it's not for them, that's fine, because as an entrepreneur, you also have to understand that some customers aren't for you, and they're probably not good for you, and you're not good for them. So when you have very clear messaging about who you are and what you do and why you do it, you attract the people that are meant to be a part of your brand, and then they stay connected to you for life, which goes back to in those first 30 days, once you're making those connections, add value to their lives immediately and then follow up with people. So I'm right now rebuilding my list of connections and allies and collaborations, and I'm rebuilding my trust online and showing people that I have value to give to them. I'm giving people valuable information that helps them do their life better. And here's the thing, don't be afraid to add value. People are always like, oh yeah, but you're giving away your money. You're giving away your sauce. Listen, I'm starting from scratch, and everything I did prior to this year is out there. Anybody can find my talks. My former partner does one of my courses, and anybody could buy it from him. And I don't make a single cent, but that's okay. I can create more because I have the science, the background, the experience, the two master's degrees, all of that behind it. I can create more value for people in their lives. So don't be afraid to give things away, to add value to people's lives, because what you're doing is you're creating these lifelong customers. It's one thing to sell something once, you know, but the iPhone, for instance, they figured out very quickly, if we want lifelong customers, you have to have subscription models. You have to have iterations. You have to have new things to add to the mix. Same thing with your business. If you want to reiterate and add more to it, add tons of value. And then don't be afraid to continue to add depth to it.
I agree with you, man. Reconnecting with people, connecting with new people, and also adding value to the people that you have reconnected and connected with. And I really love what you have shared with us in this whole episode. And Reed, how can my audience find you on social media? Where can they connect with you?
If you look for Coach Reed, I pop up. It's Coach_Reed, and that's my website as well, CoachReed.com. Those are the easiest way. That's the easiest way to find me. And if you are interested in the book, I would advise, if you want to pre-order it, that's great. You're not going to get it until the 18th of April, but I have a pre-order special running right now that if anybody who pre-orders it, if they go to CoachReed.com, it'll direct you to my pre-order page. I list all the shops and you're part of the world. I don't know if Booktopia is there. I know they're in Australia and New Zealand, but we're in Bookshop, we're in Booktopia, we're on Amazon, we're on Barnes & Noble. You name it, you can find the book. And yes, it'll be in physical bookstores. It has been sourced around the world. But if you buy it before the 18th, the reason I'm saying this is because I know people are buying it because I can see my numbers changing in my rankings, which is crazy because it's not even out yet. But I'm not getting any emails from people. If you buy it, make sure you check in with me at my website and fill out the pre-order form and tell me where you bought it and your receipt number, because I'll give you a copy of the ebook now so you can start reading it now. And then I also, like I said, I'm doing a book study. So I'm going through my own book and I'm doing a video book study. You'll get a copy of the video. You'll get that for free and you'll get discounts on future courses. So buy it now, get it and get the ebook and start digging into it. And then that way you, when April 18th hits and the real book comes to you, you'll have something you can write on.
Yep. Agree. Wow. Awesome. Thank you so much. And we really love, and you know, all the golden nuggets that you've dropped, all the value bombs that you've dropped over here. And it's really my honor and pleasure to have you here on my podcast as well. Well, so for those of you who are tuning in, thank you so much for your continuous support for the Legacy Show. And trust me, we're going to add more value to you guys. We're going to have more amazing people that's coming on the podcast. And stay tuned for the next episode of the Legacy Show. With that, take care and see you guys real soon. All right? Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of The Legacy Show. I hope it has enlightened you. I hope it has brought you to an epiphany where you realize that this is where you want to go and this is what you want to do. So I hope you will continue to support and also at the same time like, comment, and share this episode out to your people, to your family, your friends. And not forgetting that we have just created a Telegram group. It's called the Legacy Show Family. So you can go and check it out and let us know how you find this group is serving you. All right. So with that, I would like to thank you once again. See you and stay tuned for another episode of the Legacy Show.